Gino Auriemma, UConn coach, talked about him a bunch, hit 1,200 career victories. He is now six behind Tara Vanderveer and five behind coach, or two behind Coach K. That, will these records ever be touched, do we think, by coaches moving forward?
Let's start with Gino. Gino's won all 1,200 games at UConn. Some of the wins that Mike got happened to be at Army, and some of the wins that Tara Vanderveer got were at Idaho. All 1,200 of his wins are at UConn. He's a Philadelphia guy. And there's one time I had a long conversation with him. It turned out it was a year Penn State hosted the opening two rounds of the NCAAs, but Penn State wasn't in it. And so they were here, and we're in the back gym and where they had the press conference and the press area set up. And I probably talked to him for like 15, 20 minutes. Highly intelligent, funny, great sense of humor, sense of history, loves wine. And it was just a fun conversation because Joe D'Ambrosio, at the time he was doing UConn women's basketball, Joe D is, doesn't do either one anymore. That's a radio station thing. That's not a Joe D thing. And Joe and I have talked a lot over the years. And that's what opened the door for me to talk to Gino. Gino Auriemma, when he began his career in 1985 at UConn, they'd only had one winning season to that point. They had a doubleheader against Hartford. I'm trying to think if it was in the Civic Center. I think it was in the Civic
Center. It was Civic Center.
And they drew 50 fans. You know, and now, as the game went, more and more people came in.
In Hartford.
But it started out with 50 fans in the Civic Center.
Against Central Connecticut State, to be exact.
It was Central? And then the men's team was going to play in the next game. Now, at this point, the men's team had not won a national title either. Remember, the women's team in Connecticut won first. That endeared them forever in a state that had won nothing.
UConn women was the sports team.
But they won first, and that was important. The order with which it happened is important in this story. So now he goes from 50 fans in a game in 1985, which he obviously has never forgot, to over 14,000 and win number 1,200. In between 11 national titles, first one I think was in 95 when Rebecca Lobo and that group and Jen Rosati won in 95 up in Minneapolis.
That sounds right.
And then after that, see, the men's team didn't win their title till 99, 4 years later. But again, because the women's team won first, they endeared themselves forever. I mean, the situation they're in the Big East is interesting because, you know, they went to the American, which was not good. But in the process of doing that, they had a TV contract with Connecticut Public Television, which paid them like $1 million a year. Well, when they went and changed conferences, they weren't allowed to have it. You know, well, we have our own conference. Oh, yeah, lucky us. Right, you know, get a nice substandard deal. But he built it from nothing.
You were correct, by the way. 95 was the championship year, the first one.
You act like I know nothing. so now he goes through on this long journey that gets him to this point where you can tell he appreciates everything he's had, everything he's done, all the fights that he had to probably fight, especially in the early years, to get people to come out and see my team and the whole deal. Because remember, you know, 85 to 95 is not a couple of years. Okay? All those games with Tennessee, and before you got South Carolina, LSU, and Caitlin Clark, like the must-see game was UConn against Tennessee. Pat Summitt, Gino Auriemma, and the back and forth that went there. He's recruited great players. He has had a staff that has stayed stable. The fact that Chris Daly is still his assistant after all these years, where you would think at some point, like somebody would come at, after her with a boatload of money and say, hey, and she's stayed.
Mm-hmm.
So it tells you about an organization that from the outside looking in, and again, I only talked to him 15, 20 minutes, okay? And but you could tell what loyalty means. Right? And organizations that are successful that also have as a cornerstone of it loyalty stand the test of time.
Mm-hmm.
And his players over the years, especially, I mean, look, they're star players, whatever. Have you ever heard a UConn player mouth off about how bad the situation was at UConn?
Nope.
No, you have not. Now, doesn't mean all of them played.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it doesn't mean all of them played along the way. I remember when they won their first title, Hollidaysburg, from Hollidaysburg, Pam Weber was on that team. She started at guard.
Mm-hmm.
And you talk about the occasionally overused word of culture. But when you have a culture that sustains itself, not just year after year, but decade after decade, that tells you something. Are there days that the players did not like him? Of course there were.
Mm-hmm.
Now, after being there, are there days where they don't like him? Probably not.
Mm-mm.
Okay? And that's one thing you'll notice with the great coaches that stand the test of time, that when players are there, you'll have some of them, what the hell? And then when they leave, they look around and go, now I know what he or she was talking about. All that long list of Penn State football players that played for Joe, now they know what he was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Long list of players that played for James. Now they have their days that they were mad at him, whatever, and now they know what he's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with Geno. Same thing with Mike Krzyzewski. Same thing with Roy Williams. The same thing with Jay Wright. There may have been days that they were furious at him. I don't get why he's doing this. I don't understand why he's like, what do you mean? Why do I mean I got to be 10 minutes early? What the heck? And then they get to later on in life as husbands, fathers, or in this case, you know, wives, mothers, whatever. And all those lessons taught every single day. Michael Robinson's birthday is this week. Told me a great story. He goes to the Seattle Seahawks. He'd been with the 49ers. Then he goes to the Seahawks. Pete Carroll's the coach. Pete Carroll calls a 4 o'clock meeting in the afternoon. Well, at Penn State, with Joe, 4 o'clock meant 3:45. So he walks in at 3:45. There's only one other player sitting in the room. Jordan Hill of Penn State. Whose birthday, by the way, is today. The only two players in the room that were 15 minutes early were the two Penn State players. Prepared, on time, ready to go. Now, that was drummed into them here over and over. And you know darn well, wouldn't it be 3:45 in the afternoon? 3:45 in the afternoon. Right. I'll never forget a player. Garrett Sickles would talk about this. Penn State had a bye week before they played Ohio State in 2016. James had a meeting called for, I think it was probably him, it would have been 3:30 or something like that on Sunday afternoon, because they had a bye week before. And Sickles was, I think, out in California. Was late getting back. Well, he didn't play the first half of the game against Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, you think in life now he's not early all the time, has all his bases covered? Garrett's a great guy. I mean, Garrett's a great guy. James would tell you he's a great guy. But again, there was a rule in place. Just like in the Rose Bowl that year, Syed Blacknall and Manny Bowen did not play. This is not a guy who said, well, Ohio State's one of the biggest games of my career. Maybe we ought to bend it. Nope. Okay. Rose Bowl's one of the biggest games of my career. Nope. Right? Because he knew that long term they'd be better off for it. Right? He knew they'd be better off for it long term, having that kind of discipline instilled in them. Gino Auriemma very much like that. He has his rules. He has his moments. He gets mad like anybody else. But he is revered by his former players. You never hear a negative word about him from his former players. And not all of them won all the time. Okay? Not all of them won. Most of them did. Right? But guess what? They understand what he was talking about. Right? They get it. Because some days he was, because he was always open and honest with them, and some days it was good, and some days it wasn't great, but guess what? He had a higher idea in mind. He knew how to push and when not to push. Right, 1,200 wins, all at the same school. See, all at the same school. UConn gave him his opportunity. He never left. Well, you know what's interesting about that? Remember I was talking about the loyalty part of it? He stayed. He could have left.
I want you to guess, how many tournament wins do you think he has in his 39 years at UConn?
39 years tournament wins?
And to give you an idea,
I will say that he has. Yeah. I'm going to say 96.
That would be second if he was in the men's tournament, because Coach K has 101. He has 133 NCAA tournament wins.
It's incredible.
It's absurd.
Yeah. Now, have there been certain elements that have been built in? Okay. Well, number one, he has the better team.
Yeah, having Maya Moore, Breonna Stewart, like Dennis Rossi.
Look, he recruited and coached them. Look, you can take really good talent and not win. You can have great talent and not win. Remember the old story about Guy Lewis at Houston? All he do is some days is just roll the ball out, and of course he got criticized for that. No, you can screw up a team. You can overcoach them, things like that. All right. He understands the balance. Gino does. And you think about, like, even years they didn't win where they made long runs into the Final Four and so forth. You know, he knows how to win the big games. He knows how to get it. Now, the built-in advantage is how many times have they played tournament games in stores. Right? Which right now they're in a position to do again.
And that's a madhouse. Gamble is a crazy place.
Which then brings you to the next part. How many times have they had the regional in Bridgeport? All right. So, like, they've had the advantage because of how great they are and how well attended they are.
They are, like,
because look, the women's tournament is trying to get eyeballs. I got that. I mean, even to this point, I mean, you know, people forget that in 1980, the men's tournament was still playing at home sites. Then finally, in the early 80s, it changed to, like, neutral. The women's game is not there yet. And I don't know if they're going to get there.
Yeah, I know I attended. There was a few games Syracuse played in when I was there in school. And Syracuse, they have the tournament in the Carrier Dome. And it was like, well, Syracuse is a home court advantage because it's literally in their house.
You know, it's your place. And the opposition knows they're in your place. Okay, it's not as if the opposition doesn't come in and go, that's a neutral floor, no problem, let's go play. No. No. Okay. So, you know, you, like I said, built-in advantages, but you earned your built-in advantage. I mean, because of the way the women's game is at this point, and they're still, I mean, when I was looking at brackets last week for the women's team, Lady Lions, the two places they might be sent as a 7th seed were going to be Kansas State or UConn.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess who you'd play in the second round?
UConn.
Kansas State or UConn, yeah, on their home floor. I mean, mm-hmm, it's like, you know, because that's just the way it is in 2024, mm-hmm, with the women's game. And it's probably going to stay like that for a long time. Because it's going to be interesting to see when Caitlin Clark moves out what does happen here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, the women's game's in the best spot it's been in ever.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still some fragility to it.
Yeah. They've had a lot of names recently. Of course, UConn had Paige Beckers, who has been amazing, but she's had a lot of injury problems. Yeah. Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese recently with LSU. Like, you've had these big
she's
names.
Been up and down. See, it's like, and that's the LSU's not quite, you know. Mm-hmm. South Carolina's been really good, you know.
Camila Cardoso, former Syracuse player, by the way. She's just so good. She's so good. Now she's at the Olympics with Brazil, I believe, or training with Brazil. It's so much fun, and he's in Connecticut. Like, what? You grew up in Connecticut, I grew up in Connecticut. Mm-hmm. We're both Connecticut kids. For me, that was the team to watch, was UConn women's basketball. It was them, and then we got real good teams in my childhood with Kemba Walker and Shabazz Napier for the men's basketball, mm-hmm, side, but it was women's basketball through and through. Like, they were...
Shabazz Napier could play while starving like he did.
Yeah. Hey, he can make free throws. It's all that mattered. And it was just, when they were on, you watched.
Training table from, mm-hmm, every day. And
yeah,
he acted as if they were having ramen noodles.
Oh, boy.
Remember that? I was down at that Final Four. I'm like, mm-hmm, what are you talking about? And everybody, like, hook, line, and sinker. Do you know how it works?
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever heard of snack? Mm-hmm. Huh? You want to know what's at snack? You'd love it. It's incredible.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you put out stuff like that, and people, okay, you got to be able to independently think. That doesn't happen. We do too much groupthink. We don't ask the right questions.
Mm-hmm.
Like, whoa, wait a minute. You started training camp on September 27th. Which night did you have ramen noodles here? We're in early April. Which, mm-hmm, night did that happen?
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah.
Now, maybe during the summer when there's no training table, things like that. Okay, I got it. I see what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. But for the last 6 months or 7 months, what was on your, you ask them straight up.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday, how many meals did you have, and was one of them snack, and what was served at snack?
Mm.
Did anybody ask that question? No.
Good question. Good idea.
No, but again, we don't ask the right questions.
Mm-mm.
Okay? It's a hook, line, and sinker. It's a narrative. It's like, okay, most narratives are garbage because you don't ask the right questions.
Mm-hmm. But what the question in terms of this, really the thought that goes into this, is that UConn women's team was the team. They were the ones who we watched, and I grew up watching and was like, this is sports. There's no pro sports team in Connecticut. We had the New Britain Rockcats, who were the double-A team for the Twins.
Well, remember,
that was the best we had.
Remember,
we had the Whalers.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is the state of Connecticut sports before UConn won.
Mm-hmm.
The Whalers won the opening round in the Stanley Cup playoffs against Quebec. They then took the Montreal Canadiens in the next round, mm-hmm, to the seventh and deciding game. And Jacques Lemaire scored, no, I'm sorry, Claude Lemieux.
Mm-hmm.
Claude Lemieux scored the game winner in overtime in game 7 and eliminated the Whalers.
Mm-hmm.
The city of Hartford had a victory parade for the Whalers. Now, this was 9 years before UConn won. They had a victory parade for the Whalers for beating Quebec in round one and losing the seventh and deciding game to the then mighty Montreal Canadiens,
mm-hmm,
on Claude Lemieux's overtime goal in Montreal. And they had a victory parade because it is a state that had not won anything ever.
Nothing.
I mean, Yale won a couple of Ivy League titles,
mm-hmm,
and they had Calvin Hill and Brian Dowling and Bob Weinauer you know, there was the famous Harvard beat Yale 29-29 game, whatever. Mm-hmm. But that's the state of Connecticut sports at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that was the state of Connecticut sports. And then UConn won the whole thing in women's basketball.
Oh, my God.
That allowed the state to embrace a winner. And because they won first,
mm-hmm.
it is carried to this day as to how much people love them.
I vividly remember, I believe it was it 09? I want to say it was the 09 team. I think 09, we got the next Monday off school because that was when the victory parade was going to happen. I believe it was the Monday.
Right.
It was whenever the parade was going on, we had the day off of school and we were an hour from stores. We had the day off and I'd say out of my grade of 100 kids, 45 made it up to UConn to go watch the parade, wherever it was.
It was probably in Hartford.
It was probably in Hartford. Went up the half hour, 35 minutes to Hartford to go watch the parade. Mm-hmm. Like, it was the team. Sure. And he is the driving force in that. And we always talk about the brands in college football. There are these brands. Right. UConn is the brand in women's basketball.
No question.
Like, they are and always will be the brand.
It's interesting because the UConn men have won 5 national titles. They've actually won mm-hmm. more national titles than anybody else
mm-hmm.
since 1999.
Yeah.
Like Duke? No, they don't have 5. Kentucky has 1. Okay. Duke has what, 3 since 99?
Something like
3.
That. Yeah, that sounds
3
right.
3 since 99. All right. Kentucky has 1. All right. Wow. Indiana has none. They got 5.
Syracuse has 1.
But they got 5.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the funny thing is, because of, and Gino Orienta, by the way, is loves men's basketball. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with that.
Yeah.
But sometimes you'd never know that they've won 5. Now, they've done it with 3 different coaches.
Jim Calhoun, Kevin Ollie.
Kevin Ollie won 1 in 14, and last year, Dan Hurley. And right now, they're, mm-hmm. I believe they're ranked number 1 right now.
Yeah, they're number 1, number 2. They always flip with Purdue at the moment because Donovan Klingon's great. Right. They've got a great team.
But, I mean, that's the state of it. But this is about Gino and what he's accomplished. He has taken it from the unnoticed, under-the-radar days, and he's a big reason why the Caitlin Clarks of the world are able to thrive today.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's the one that got Rebecca Lobo, Jen Rosati, Nikisha Sales, Diana Taurasi, Sue Bird, Brianna Stewart. You go through the long mm-hmm. list of great players that have all won titles at UConn and got eyeballs because people do want to see dynastic teams.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they've been a dynasty, right? Well, because of what he's done of laying a foundation and then some, people now will want to watch Caitlin Clark play.
Mm-hmm.
If Caitlin Clark were playing, with all due respect, back in the 80s, everybody would say, oh, yeah, it's really great, because I did a Cheryl Miller game,
mm-hmm.
broadcast a Cheryl Miller game, okay? She was a great player,
mm-hmm.
really great. And everybody knew who she was. Mm-hmm. She had a 100-point game in,
mm-hmm.
in high school, right? You know, she was more famous than her brother Reggie at that point, okay? But it still didn't move the needle nationally
mm-hmm.
like it does today. And that's because of everything that Gino accomplished, and he'll tell you, along with Pat Summitt and now with Don Staley. Mm-hmm. And now, okay? But now you've got 9 million people watching the championship game because of all those days that he coached at UConn, made them relevant, made them great, kept them great, and brought more eyeballs to TV sets to the sport of women's basketball than ever, that has allowed along the way the Cheryl Swoops, the Lisa Leslies, the, you know, Candace Parkers and everybody else to thrive in the sport along with his UConn players.
Mm-hmm.
And now you have a championship game between LSU and Iowa that draws 9 million. And he's a big reason why, because you can never forget your foundational people that kept it going, mm-hmm. made it better. And like that's why I talk so much history, because I feel like there are too many people that oh, well, the athletes today are just much better. You have no idea what they went through back then.
Mm-hmm.
You have no idea. I mean, it's, yeah.
We wouldn't have the NBA we do today without Magic and Bird. We wouldn't.
Well, you don't have the NBA today without the days that George Mikan and those guys were going on buses to keep it alive. You don't have the NBA today unless you've got Bill Russell and Wilt Chamberlain going head-to-head, right, trying to keep the league alive. And then you get to the 70s, and then people start looking at it as the, quote, the drug league. Mm-hmm. They get challenged by the ABA. ABA, you know, it's, they have people barely hanging on. Like, you're foundational people that went through, you know, they don't have the, they didn't have the trainers you have the today. They don't have the travel they had today. You know, right? You're not where you are today because what if they failed? What if they failed? It's hard to fathom. But, like, you know, women's basketball for a long time, you know, I mean, Geno fought. Because I saw Rini Portland here, fight. Now, Rini made a mistake. She should have played Geno. Geno kept asking to play him. Rini wouldn't play him. And he never forgot that. That's one thing about Geno. He doesn't forget. Geno does not forget.
Nope.
Okay? He remembers any slight along the way.